This is the Schnauzer Logic Radio Company.
And this is Schnauzer Logic, the podcast, episode number 15, being recorded on Wednesday, May the 10th, 2006.
Groundbreaking, critically acclaimed, smash hits, HBO original series. And now, the HBO original series.
Schnauzer Logic.
Four guys are out golfing one afternoon when they start to get annoyed by a very slow group ahead of them. After another 15 minutes of waiting, they decide to play through. The first three tee off, each nearly hits the slow group. Then, just as the fourth guy is teeing up, the course superintendent runs over and starts yelling, "Hey! Hey! Give those guys a break! They're blind!" "Oh my God, we're so sorry," say the three guys, but the fourth guy angrily picks up his driver and whacks the ball right into one of the blind men's carts, saying, "Fuck 'em! They could have played last night!"
Clinton, liberals, dittos.
I'm Dr. Mora, and I'm my poodle's mother.
Today on All Things Considered to Death, Moss.
Yeah, baby, show me your...
Buena vista, my friends. Buena vista, and welcome. You have managed to tune in, latch on, and otherwise download that stream of bits known around the world as Schnauzer Logic. Yes, this is Schnauzer Logic, the podcast, episode number 15, being recorded on Wednesday, May the 10th, 2006. Suffering fuckatash. And my name is Robin Goldstein. I'm your host. I'm your buddy. I'm your pal. I'm also a straight white Buddhist vegetarian lesbian fraternity boy trapped in the body of a recovering transsexual woman, patent attorney with arts and humor and city planning. Sold American. And I'm thrilled and delighted to invite you once again to stay tuned for the next 2 hours. It's a 2 hour podcast. 2 fucking hours. It's like it's never ending. You know the never ending story? I'm Jesus. Welcome to my podcast. We got a great show for you today. First of all, we've got checking in with us is our good friend Jason Nathanson, randomshow.blogspot.com. He's on the road. I think he's actually gone 1,000 miles at this point, and he's up in the Pacific Northwest. And we'll be checking in with him, find out what's been going on with him. I guess he's been on the road for over a week now, and so we'll figure out what's happening there. We've got a special call we're going to be making to Hong Kong. Got a ding 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 ding. Oh, dude, you can't. You can't blow it. Come on.
There we go.
Ding 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 ding.
Excellent. That's a national anthem, you know.
I believe so.
But you have to sing it in Chinese. So you can't sing it in American.
That's true.
All right. We're going to be talking to Robin Goldstein.
What?
Yeah. Robin Goldstein. Robin Goldstein, who is a travel writer for Fodor's magazine and a restaurant reviewer, I guess, as part of the travel thing, and is someone that I met in the very infancy of the internet about 10 years ago when he was a student at Harvard. I think he was a pre-law, pre-med. I don't know what the difference is. But he and I, at the very early days, it's like, you know how they talk about like when the first automobiles... You know, and in the middle of some small town, someplace, there were only two cars, you know, for 100 miles, and they managed to hit each other, right, in the middle of town. That was what Robin Goldstein and I did about 10 years ago, and about 2 weeks ago, we wound up running into each other again, and he said to me, "Are you the Robin Goldstein?" And I go, "Are you the Robin Goldstein?" Which is very hard to do on the internet, make your voice high like that. And so he said, I'm gonna be writing some reviews for Fodor's. I'm gonna be in Hong Kong next week. Why don't you call me there on your dime, or whatever Juan? No, that's the Mexican, isn't it? The Mexican
peso.
Was a bad. That's it. Peso. Yeah, the
peso.
Chinese peso. Exactly. With where you grind up pine nuts, I think. And
I just heard this morning, penny and nickels. They cost more right now to make a penny and nickel than ever before.
Is that right?
Yep.
Breaking news.
That's right.
So we're going to be talking to Robin Goldstein. Plus, we got a plumbing update.
Absolutely.
And more stuff and nonsense. Oh, we'll be doing road stories with Brian Cox and you. So we invite you to stick around. Let's say Sona Vista. We've already had you on the mic here. A good friend, part of East Vitali, Sona Vista.
Sona Vista, Robin. Sona Vista, Sean.
Sean Meehan's Zona Vista.
Zona Vista. Zona Vista, folks.
How are ya?
I'm good. It's hot.
It is here. It's hot.
And what else is it?
It's humid.
It's humid.
It's Africa hot.
Yeah, it's no good.
It's sticky for all the wrong reasons.
Oh, and what would the right reason be? Oh, maybe we won't go there.
Just say it's humid.
I'm speechless. That's a good thing. All right, here we go. We are coming up on 6 minutes into this very special episode. It's a very special episode of Schnauzer Logic. We need special episodes. We need to have the music and, you know.
The NBC star, The More You Know.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Except here it'd be like, the more you, less you.
We're sorry you know.
Bong, 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 bong. I've actually been thinking about doing that. Oh, well, first of all, hold on a second here because we're going to piss off our regular guest. We got Kipadada. We got, we'll do a different order today. We're going to screw things up. We got Harry Whittington. We got Dick Cheney and Michael Zwirling.
Stroke or unload.
It's not so funny that way.
It creates causation problems. I don't know.
I remember learning about the commutative law when I was in high school, and the professor explained it. Explained it this way. Throwing the ball and opening the window is not the same as opening the window and throwing the ball. I got it. And how are you?
Other than that it's sticky, I am actually doing pretty well.
You look good.
It has been a fine week, and, good, just good times.
What am I looking at here? We're going to do...
You're looking through a stack of,
I have
of
too much paper.
Fabulous show prep material.
I do.
Material.
I have too much show prep here. I'm overdosed with show prep.
One thing Robin insists on, she must have a stack of show prep because we got to have places to go. We can't just sit and meander around like the banana splits on their crappy looking set.
Was that cool or what?
That was very nice. That brings back so many memories.
Wasn't that cool?
Oh, that was very cool.
You and the listening audience, of course, were not able to join us. Perhaps you did in spirit. But just prior to the recording of this podcast, we were enjoying the splendor of late 60s, early 70s Hanna-Barbera magic, the Banana Splits. And it was really amazing. I mean, that show had the production values, I don't know, it must have
cost American Idol
upwards of $6, $8, $10. They had two or three painted flats.
Right.
And one actually had a door that worked. There was a slide, and there were...
stripper pole.
There was a stripper pole. And that was pretty much their set. And they had a couple of things. They had an old, some kind of old French horn.
Yes.
That was glued to the wall for reasons we may never understand. It kind of looked like a real poor man's... TGIF. You know, it looked... Wow. And a lot of it wasn't even in focus.
No. And the vocalization, which obviously came afterwards, didn't match what the characters were doing. And you could see spaces where clearly they were expecting it would be dialogue dubbed in later, but it wasn't dubbed in later. Well, I think we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, and so, of course, I went to the place where you can buy everything, legal and not, eBay, and I found someone in Australia who was selling the Banana Splits as a 4-DVD series. Wow. For, I don't know, $15 or something like that, and so I bought a copy of the Banana Splits, so I have 4 DVDs with Banana Splits. They're very weird. It's a poor reproduction. I don't know whether it was dubbed off of some studio's VCR or something. It has some weird crap.
It was very strange. What's the name of the technology they used before videotape? You know,
kinescopes?
Kinescope, thank
yeah,
you.
Yeah, but that was shooting a television camera at a film camera at a TV
at
screen.
At a TV screen.
Right.
And this has, although it doesn't have the same quality, it roughly has the same resolution. It has that same kind of god-awful look.
Yes.
Was videotape technology that awful in 1970?
No, I'm guessing this was probably a dub of a dub of a dub. This is probably a series of... I'm guessing that this was a series of tapes that somebody probably secreted out of a television station overseas and has held on to all of these years. And so what you're seeing is a dub of a very old copy of a tape that's been floating around, because there was all kinds of little weird stuff.
There was
a
lot of artifacts right around the edge of
a lot of visual artifacts around the edge. What I watched earlier in the week, I watched the first DVD. I watched the Arabian Nights, I think was one of them. And I watched the Three Musketeers. And I didn't watch the was it Danger Island?
Island was the other. That was a live action show,
which
though,
I
was
did
it not
get to yet. Yes, yeah. Yes. I think it's on one of the other DVDs.
How many episodes are on each DVD?
I don't know. It's all split up in a weird kind of way. So it's clearly from some kind of master, because the segments are all broken up as sort of the way the TV station would have them, so they could kind of shuffle them around as necessary. Yeah. But Richard Donner directed the live action.
You are kidding.
Oh no, that's where he got his start in directing, was directing Phantom Island, whatever the hell.
Adventure Island.
Adventure
or something
Island.
Like that. Yeah.
Yeah, he was the director of that. When you watch the credits at the very
Richard
end.
Richard Donner did Lethal Weapon.
And
yes.
Superman.
Oh, very
the first
cool.
Superman, and yeah, that's where he got his start from.
Wow.
Exactly.
You can see a little Mel Gibson in one of those banana splits, can't you? I mean, there's a little bit of hostility in one of those banana splits. I can
you
see
are
Mel.
So lucky that I don't have the sound effects open here. I'm just...
I really can't.
It's true. It's hard to know which of those splits is a...
which
is,
one of those splits
I'm,
is going to...
I'm a week away from retirement. I'm too old for this shit. And which of them is the crazy guy?
That'd be Flegel. I'm thinking Flegel.
Snorkel or what was it?
Snorky.
Snorky.
Yeah, Flegel was the beagle, and Snorky was the elephant. And
who's
and,
the ape?
The ape was Bongo. Bongo was the ape. Nothing racial going on there, obviously. Well, come on. I mean, you didn't see it? Oh, please.
They look like Larry, Curly, and Moe to me.
And
they look like the Three Stooges.
Yeah. And
those are also your car's best friends.
But what I think is I watched a whole DVD.
That's
first
cool.
of all, the animation is horrendous. I mean, there's nothing moving. You know,
it looks like that Saturday Night Live in animation. Those two gay guys on Saturday Night Live.
Yes, Robert like Smigel, the right. Biggles the. Well, that's what he's parodying.
Right.
Those
right.
are parody of the early Hanna-Barbera cartoons, where they clearly didn't have any animators. They just had one kid in from college who was, you know, tracing as fast as his little hands would carry him. Because nothing moves in the animation except the mouth. It isn't even, what was it, Crash, there was a TV program where it was puppets, but they put a mouth of a human being through the...
Yes, it was Alpha Boy or something,
Fireball
Astro
XL5
Boy.
Or it was a couple like that.
Yeah, the Astro Boy, I think, is the one I remember, but those... Fireball XL5, those were just straight-on marionettes.
Okay.
They just had the little Charlie McCarthy mouths that, you know, kind of opened on a hinge.
But they moved like Michael J. Fox.
Oh, come on. Poor guy.
Am I wrong?
No, I'm just like, I bet Michael J. Fox's wife loves him now more than ever, you know, with the finger and the...
What?
I'm just saying, the shakes.
Wait, he goes to the dirty place.
Wait a second. First of all, you're giving me crap. like, Michael J. Fox.
Yeah, I love the guy.
It's so sad, but I bet his wife loves the fact that he's a human vibrator. He's not even allowed to go to South Dakota.
Poor guy.
No, but you know, it was Crash. I don't know what the heck it was, but instead they had bad painted jobs with a like rotoscope mouth of a human being coming through,
just sort of green screened into the it was horrible.
It was horrible. This was almost that bad, and nothing moves. But getting back to my original point, when you watch these things, there was something. They were funny. We were laughing, and I don't think it was just nostalgia. There's a goofiness there, that and there's also an innocence. There's no sexual tension. I mean,
what?
No. But
between
I mean,
who?
Snorky. I mean, you look at that.
It's palpable.
Oh, what a baby.
What show are you watching? There was a wonderful little moment in the show where some little girl in a...
looked like Marcia Brady or something. One of those,
kind of a little Marcia Brady. Yeah. Like when the Brady Bunch first started, very young, say prepubescent.
Sour Grapes Gang.
She was apparently delivering a message from the arch rivals of the Banana Splits, the Sour Grapes Gang. She came to the Banana Splits door and sort of danced in... with this little piece of binder paper that had this message on it. And at some point, she takes this deep bow as she hands the binder paper over to one of the banana splits. And the cameraman, at this point, there's a very abrupt and awkward cut.
Assuming it's a man.
Because clearly, her short little skirt top thing is about to come up over her ass.
Yeah, a 1960s mini skirt, right?
Yeah, yeah. And it's going to rise right up over her 11-year-old ass, and we can't have that on screen, so there's this incredibly awkward edit.
The camera went right above her back.
Yeah, and it was just really extraordinary. But so... They went out of their way to avoid any sense of sexuality.
But there's something innocent about the show. There's a kind of silly innocence about it. And you know, they recorded an album with that kind of stuff. I don't think there's that innocence today. I mean, I don't mean to be preachy, but things have become sexualized even for kids at the age that that show was geared towards. I mean, what do your nieces and nephews watch?
My nephew has enjoyed a lot of Pokemon.
Okay. Well, that's not sexual, is it?
No.
Okay.
But, I mean, the word poke is in there.
Oh, I found what I was looking for. Hold on.
Pocket monster is what Pokemon means, which I think is kind of perverse.
I think the people making the animation today are people our age that came out of the 60s and 70s and rock and roll, and it's like that's all sexual. The people making the Hanna-Barbera back then were coming out of the 50s where it was a shock to have the Beatles and it was a shock to have Elvis. So they were, I think, still innocent. The people creating today are making it for you and I. They're making these cartoons.
Well, that's interesting. I hadn't thought about that.
Cartoons for you and I. And they're all probably in 35, 40-year-old people that everything's a sexual innuendo, probably at their job place. And
do you remember a show? This came on briefly, but it was very hyped in the early, mid-90s. There was a Brazilian star, Zazu or Jaju or something like that. She was a Brazilian model. Mm-hmm. And she had a program on NBC, a child's show. And she was... I mean, scorching hot. And she wore these little outfits and did these dance numbers with kids. And it was just, it was so clearly sexualized and pandering that, I mean, they didn't even.
What are you laughing at?
I just picture Robin, like, after the show, going on eBay, getting the Brazilian hot.
What do you mean, after the show? I got a wireless connectivity. You just keep talking.
Go on.
Is that a Z or an S?
It's an X. I've already been to eBay. My copy's on the way. It's going to be hard to explain this to the wife, but it was so overt that she even did interviews where she said, you know, where she took the heat. She took some of the flack and said, look, kids all around the world love beautiful things. I'm a beautiful thing. I wear beautiful clothes. And I bend over suggestively.
Oh, very nice.
Which is a little something for dad. Just a little, little happy moment for dad.
A little something, something. I miss that innocence. I'm gonna make some copies of the banana split stuff for my nephew. Uh-huh. I made him a copy of Soupy Sales. They released some Soupy Sales DVDs. It has the same absurd quality. There's an absurd comedy quality that you have to almost be sophisticated enough to get. It's sort of meta comedy, right? It's deconstructed comedy. There's nothing funny about. I mean, the costumes are horrible. Kids got it that it was bad.
I love the banana splits, and I wanted to live in their horrible little universe.
Right.
You know, I was very excited by the banana splits. They hit me at the right age. They came out at the right time for me. And I know I was very taken with them.
Well, even the comedians of you were just talking about Soupy Sales, and back then we had who, like Bill Cosby and Bob Hope and people like that were clean and wholesome. I mean, nowadays...
Well, I don't know. You know, Soupy Sales and certainly Bill Cosby were not so clean or wholesome.
No. Off stage.
But, right. And even on stage, they got their stuff in.
Yeah.
Soupy Sales, you know, had a lots sophisticated...
Lots of entendre.
And, you know, his sense of humor was not particularly clean. And I think Bill Cosby, over the years, you know, he's become a caricature of what he tried to portray himself as.
Walk into the store.
I got some faggots and some blues. Every day.
Eating the jello.
Yeah, right.
But those guys were definitely trying to slide their their anti-establishment views in covertly.
I think so. Yep. And I think, you know, it's funny because the stuff that works best for kids is the stuff I think that adults appreciate too, right? So Rocky and Bullwinkle.
Yeah.
Very popular with kids. Lots of double entendres, lots of visual jokes that adults didn't get, right? Subi Sales, same kind of thing. Very popular with kids, very popular with adults. Banana Splits, I mean, we still like it. And then you look at Bob Hope. I mean, I didn't like him as an adult, so why would I like him as a kid?
Do you like him dead?
Why?
Is he? Really?
Bob? I mean, I don't mean any disrespect, but...
He never hooked in with your sense of humor.
That was vaudeville.
Yeah.
That was comedy as a bludgeon.
Yeah.
Right? Which is that we were not all in the joke. That's the difference. Bob Hope, we were not all in the joke. He was funnier than you were. Banana Splits, we're all in the joke. We're all kind of inside on this. Soupy Sales, we're all kind of inside on this.
That's true.
I mean, you said it's like laughing, right? We're kind of hip. Bob Hope was always hipper than the room. Bob Hope was that generation's Dennis Miller.
Yeah, that's a very good... I think that's very insightful. And
I read it on your blog, Parvis. I'm sorry.
Thank you. Give me credit where credit's due.
I am.
Well, Parvis, my hat is off to you.
Please, thank you.
Oh!
I was just hearing that sort of hum
I know.
In the background. I was waiting for the video game to start.
All right, tell you what we'll do. We'll take a break. We've got a bunch of new tunage today. We'll take a short break. We'll come back. We'll try to talk to Jason Nathanson.
Cool.
On the road from someplace in the Pacific Northwest. How's that sound? You're listening to Schnauzer Logic, my babies. Dr. Johnny Fever used to say that, right?
Yes.
WKRP?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You having a better day today?
Yesterday was a fabulous day at work.
Sorry, we should have done the show yesterday. Is what you're saying?
Today was not that great, but I got a great continuation from last week.
All right, hand check. All right, excellent. Good. We'll come back. We'll do Jason, and then maybe we'll do you a little bit while. All right, you're listening to Schnauzer Logic, the podcast. Robin Goldstein, Sean Meehan, Parvis Vitali. Stick around, my babies. Stick around.
Sometimes.
This is Schnauzer Logic.
Go!
feel that in every way, this new radio series offers an unusual opportunity to combine broad popular appeal with truly distinguished radio treatment.
Oh, and this one time, at band camp, I stuck a flute in my pussy.
Frisco!
Hello?
This is Schnauzer Logic.
Welcome back. We are 26 minutes into this episode of Schnauzer Logic, the podcast. Robin Goldstein, straight white booze vegetarian lesbian fraternity boy trapped in the body of a recovering transsexual and patent attorney with us, tumor master green city planning, www.schnauzerlogic.com. The blog was down this week. All kinds of problems over T-Blog. What was so interesting to me, though, was that everybody complains about the problems. Nobody bothers to send a short email to the system administrator saying the blogs are down. So after everybody complained about it, and I read all this complaint in the kind of the community bulletin board area, which was still working, I sent a little note and I said, hey, Rocky, I just wanted to let you know that you probably already got 100 notes, but the blog is down. If you try to go to any of the blog pages, you'll get an error message. And he wrote back and goes, no, you're the only one who told me. Thanks. Nobody bothered to mention anything.
It's better to light a candle than to curse the darkness.
I thought it was better to light a candle than the cursed star's day, but maybe that's just when I was growing up. Anyhow, welcome back. We are in Schnauzer Logic, www.schnauzerlogic.com, robin@schnauzerlogic.com. That is the email address, and of course, we're on MySpace. Did you go over to MySpace yet for your band?
No.
Okay. You guys getting close to releasing? You got some music? You going to bring some music in some week so we can?
I will. I will.
Not asking you for a date. I'm not asking you to put out. Don't go changing.
Try to please me. Ooh.
You don't bring me flowers.
You don't sing me love songs. You hardly talk to me anymore when I come through the door at the end of the day.
I remember when you used to say you love me. Now I sound like
you know. That's why I left you. That's all you do is demand.
All right, we promise not to sing anymore, so let's just go right into the next bit here. Yeah. All right, you know what this music means.
That was a beautiful Neil Diamond.
I wasn't doing Neil Diamond. The bald Jewish guy in the 1988 VW van, Jason Nathanson, Son of Easta.
Son of Easta, Robin.
How
are
ya?
You know, it's better to light a match after you use the bathroom.
is that how it goes?
That's the phrase.
I knew it was something like that. So tell us where you are today.
I am outside Spokane, Washington.
Ooh, the Pacific Northwest.
Pacific Northwest.
Heart of
heading
grunge.
Along. I'm getting east now. I'm kind of in the eastern part of Washington.
Now, there was a World's Fair there some 30 years ago, was there not?
You are correct. And my parents were actually at that fair, and they showed me slides before I left. I almost fell asleep, but it was nice.
I thought you were going to need resuscitation. Get the defibrillator. It's another slideshow victim.
Yeah.
So does that mean you've passed through Seattle?
Yes, I was in Seattle yesterday.
Wow, that's fairly fast, isn't it? That's a big deal.
It is. But I've kind of learned that if you don't know somebody in the city, it's kind of hard to really enjoy it a whole lot. So on my way back,
I think Lewis and Clark had written that in their journals when they.
The problem is he has no one to trade out with to defend his van. You know, he can't go sightseeing until he finds someone he knows and trusts to keep the Bowie knife and the baseball bat out in front of the van.
That's very true.
So tell us about Seattle.
I have a friend in Seattle, but she wasn't around.
You have a friend in Jesus too, just so that you know.
Thank you.
Okay.
Nice to know.
Jason, did you see where Kurt Cobain got shot?
It was a head, wasn't it? He got shot in the head, I think.
No. They don't have his house all cordoned off, and it's not like Graceland over there.
I don't
think
it's a crime scene anymore, dude. It's quite a while ago. I'm sure they've repainted.
I didn't go to check that out. No, that wasn't on my itinerary.
Yeah. So what did you do?
Well, I went to Seattle yesterday, and...
did you go to a Starbucks?
Which one? Of the thousands that there are. There's Starbucks in Starbucks there. I went to this Space Needle first, and there was a Starbucks there.
Okay.
And $14 to go up an elevator and basically look around at a whole city. I could have gone downtown and gone into an office building and done the same thing. But it was pretty cool, I guess. It's a big needle. Looks just like it looks in the pictures.
So you did go up to take some pictures?
Yeah, I went up and took some pictures, and they all came out. I mean, everything's too far away with the little digital camera that I have, so it just looks like pictures of vast scenery.
So is this a theme, though? Because the Space Needle was part of
World's Fair.
A World's Fair, was it not?
An exposition, I think so.
My diabolical plan is coming together. You can see it now.
It's
state fairs and world fairs all over the country.
What a beautiful plan. That really could be a coffee table book.
Old abandoned sites of world fairs.
So you went to the Space Needle. How long were you in Seattle proper?
I was in Seattle for the day.
Okay. And so tell us about a date. Now, do you plan what you're going to do before you get there, the night before? Do you just kind of stay up late and have the AAA books open and map everything out with a yellow marker, or do you just kind of...
I was in the beginning kind of figuring it out as I went along, and that's what I did when I went into Portland. Realized that's not such a good plan because you don't really get anything done. You spend the whole time driving around, not knowing where you are, not knowing what you're looking at.
So planning is highly overrated is what you're saying.
Planning is a definite must if you're going to be in the big cities.
Okay.
So the night before, I stayed at a campground right outside Seattle, marked everything out on my little books and stuff, and planned to go to the Space Needle, Pike Place Market, and downtown to get a massage because my neck and back have been hurting. Because of the driving
and the furniture lifting.
That's right. Did you deliver the?
Was there any cargo on this haul? This short haul.
You're coming back empty.
No cargo. I'm done with delivering the cargo.
He's traveling light. No yeah. Load. Good buddy. Get better mileage that way.
Jason, I've been reading your blog. It sounds to me like you've been bored to tears.
No, I haven't been bored to tears. All right. I might be boring other people to tears, but I've been having a good time. But I mean, I haven't had like huge adventures yet. You know, we're only about a week and a half in, but you know, I haven't had sex with three one-armed women in a pool hall or anything like that yet.
What wasn't that what Beretta? Who was the guy he wanted to do that.
And I'm thinking I should have brought him along with me.
Robert Blake.
Yeah. Robert Blake.
You just brought the parrot along with you. It's much safer. No opposable thumbs. Much harder to cock that trigger. So Pike's Peak, no, not Pike's Peak, Pike's Market?
Pike's Place, which is very, very cool.
So that's where they throw fish.
Yeah, that's where they throw the fish, and I went to see them throw the fish.
What time do you have to get there in order to do that?
They throw fish all day. There's no fish throwing time.
All right.
And I couldn't figure out exactly why they throw the fish, though, because there's people inside the little booth
that are
where
hungry.
They sell the fish.
Right.
And there's somebody outside, and there's no reason to get the fish inside the booth. They take the fish out of the booth in order to throw them back into the booth. So there's no real reason why the fish are being thrown except to delight tourists, I guess, like me.
I think it started during part of the recovery from the recession. It was a WPA Works project.
To
give people jobs. One of the jobs that somebody they put nouns and verbs in a hat, and one of the combinations was fish thrower. And they figured, well, fuck, man, that's what Roosevelt wants. That's what Roosevelt gets.
It's better than the soup kitchen.
Which was another combination. Now, fortunately, they didn't.
It's a good thing Soup Thrower didn't know.
That's what seeing them throw the fish, and I'm standing there taking pictures of watching them throw the fish.
Yes.
And as I'm taking pictures, I see through the viewfinder a fish coming right at my head. And the guy who's supposed to catch the fish is way over to my left, and there's no way he's catching this fish. This fish is hitting me in the head.
So he's high and outside.
Yeah. So I duck down really fast to avoid the fish and smack my head into a stroller that's sitting right next to me. And I'm dazed for a little bit, and I get up and I look, and everybody around me is kind of looking and laughing. And I look down to my feet, and it's a fish-stuffed animal that they threw just to try to, you know, scare somebody like me who was taking a picture.
Screw with the little Jew.
And there was no fish that was going to hit me. It was just a stuffed animal.
Well, I mean, have you gotten counsel?
No, I haven't. I didn't sustain so far any long-term injuries.
Well,
so,
you don't know that.
Yeah, I mean, maybe after that massage, they would discover that there was fish lash.
Significant fish injury.
You know, I would look into this because your earning potential could be damaged.
I know that Aquaman had trouble urinating. You may discover the same kinds of... Sorry. Did you follow David Blaine, by the way? Apropos of absolutely nothing.
I've been listening to Howard Stern every day, so I've been kind of keeping up through that.
Gotcha. So you spent a day in Seattle.
Yeah.
You went to the top of the... Space Needle.
After the market, I go to get a massage.
Okay.
And I haven't really gotten too many massages before, and I didn't specify if I wanted a man or a woman to give me a massage. And in walks to my massage room, "Hi, I'm Ivan. I'll be giving you your massage today." And it was a little weird, because, I mean, I've never been rubbed with hot oil by a man before.
You're missing out.
I've never even been rubbed with hot oil by a woman. This is
Jason,
so sad.
You're getting rubbed by a man with hot oil. You've been thrown a stuffed fish. This is a good trip.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's carting furniture. I told you last week, it's a 6,000-mile race for home. So how was Ivan? Did you get a number?
Ivan was, it was a decent massage, but my neck still hurt. So you didn't fix
Well, because you must be all fucking tense, dude. I mean, the whole time. That's why they do that. So you have to keep coming back. It's like crack.
Yeah, well, I don't think this crack is working because I'm not going back.
All right. So when did where'd you stay last night?
Last night I stayed in a Safeway parking lot.
Yeah.
That's what I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah.
I think you need to rate these places with stars. Just so that people
travel.
Yeah, people traveling the back roads will have some appreciation of what parking lots and empty lots and fields and what have you are the best. You know, you could rate it on privacy, noise issues.
I'll take the money I get from my lawsuit at the fish market and I'll start a Nathanson guidebook.
Exactly.
Actually, the best place to nap probably are Safeway parking lots or supermarket parking lots because that's where people are working all nights to the hour. All hours of the night, too.
So, both.
Yeah. Nobody bothered me.
So nobody bothers you. But if you have your car parked in a Bank of America, what the hell is this car doing parked in the Bank of America?
Might be a little suspect.
Correct.
So you got up this morning.
Hey, Jason, can I ask you a quick question?
Sure.
What kind of stuff are you eating on the road? Are you going through a lot of drive-thru?
No. I have actually, except for the first day, I haven't been to any kind of fast food. Diners and stuff. Bought some food at the market yesterday. Been trying to keep it relatively healthy and stuff. But it's hard being a vegetarian and being on the road and stuff. I guess part of the fun for some people would be like to sample the local delicacies and stuff like that. And you don't get much of that when you're a vegetarian.
Well, Seattle's supposed to have some tremendous vegetarian food, right? And vegetarian restaurants, vegetarian... Isn't that where...
Kurt Cobain got shot.
Exactly. Exactly. Did you see where he got shot?
In the head.
Thank you.
That would be funny if Jason was taking his body across country.
You'd be a great fucking witness in a homicide. Excuse me, sir, can I ask you a few questions? Did you see where he got shot? It looked like it was a head. Dung, dung. Sorry. No. When Jason's on the phone, we need to make it about Jason. We can do this when he's not on the phone. All right, so you plowed on, and now you're east of where you were last night?
Yes, I'm east of where I am, kind of by Spokane. Very close to the border of Idaho.
So where are you? So where are you right now? Are you in the van? Are you in a restaurant?
I'm gas station parking lot.
Gas station parking lot. Okay.
Love those gas station parking lots.
Yeah. If I talk nice to the guy, I might be able to sleep here tonight.
Oh, is that right? So this is it for the night?
No. I'm gonna. There's a bunch of campgrounds around here. And I kind of go by the seat of my pants. I don't plan too much in advance and just pull into a town and find a campground there.
Are you listening to local radio?
I am listening to local radio, and a lot of it around here is either Christian or sports, which isn't all that. I'm not really into that. But the one thing I noticed that's strange coming in here is that Tom Likas was on AM radio, and so was NPR. Yeah, big difference from, the big cities where it's all on FM.
Is that any better when it's on AM radio?
No.
Okay.
Worse.
So, you have a blog where you've been keeping people updated. It's randomshow.blogspot.com. We've got a link over on our blog. And by the way, the photographs that you posted the other day are terrific, especially the commentary. I love the 2+4 and you're so fucking funny, dude. I mean, I hope you continue to write stuff like that because it's just I highly recommend that people go over to that site. But I think what Parviz was suggesting at the beginning of our little talk today was that this is sort of not necessarily meeting your thoughts of what it would be like. It's lonelier on the road.
Well, it is and it isn't. Yeah, it's lonelier than I thought it would be. I've been an only child all my life and been fine being solitary, and didn't think that would be a problem at all. But so far, the beginning of this trip, I don't really know people in the areas that I'm going to. So it's kind of been figuring out stuff for myself, and it's harder in the big areas to meet people. In the campgrounds, I've been meeting people. Mm-hmm. Met a nice girl from named Paula from Seattle last week in Klamath Falls. But it's a little bit lonely, I will say that.
And you weren't expecting that?
I wasn't expecting that, but this part of my trip, before I get to Vegas, was kind of always meant to be figuring things out time. Mm-hmm. 18 days of figuring out how to live on the road, how to travel, how to have fun, what to do, how to coordinate going into cities and stuff. And I'm slowly learning that.
Sure.
So,
and you also mentioned in the blog that you're a little shy. You know, that's sort of not one of the things that you've naturally done well.
I am a shy person.
Yeah.
I have a lot of friends and stuff where I live, but, you know, I'm not the kind of person who's going to go to a bar by themselves and, you know, be dancing on tables by the end of the night.
Well, you have been going to bars by yourself.
I have been.
And that's more than I usually...
It's not that fun. I mean, it's hard to walk in there. You know, you go and you have a drink and you sit there for 5 minutes and you're hanging out and you're looking around for people to talk to and stuff. And it's hard to kind of get in conversations that way.
Did you
campgrounds I've found so far.
Did you talk to the guy who gave you a hot oil massage? Did you talk to that guy?
I talked to him a little bit. Most of the time, I was just trying to concentrate on not getting a boner.
And were you successful?
I was.
Congratulations.
So you did have a happy ending.
Yeah. You set the victory parameters for that encounter right where they needed to be.
They were on
stun. In my own special way.
Yeah. So, but day 19 of the trip, I mean, from there, you're on a rocket ride, right? It's like 3,000 miles to Graceland. It's just boom.
Right. You know, and New Orleans, the city I'm very excited about going in, and I've been there before, so I kind of know what to do. The East Coast is littered with people that I know, and friends and stuff. And so that's going to be fun, you know, going around New York and Washington and Boston with friends to show me around and hang out with will be cool. But, yeah, I mean, on the one hand, I think it might have been a little better at this point to have somebody with me. On the other hand, you know, that could also get annoying because I'm doing whatever I want to do when I want to do it.
Any spiritual insights at this point? Because, I know that this is sort of a sightseeing tour, but it sounds like this is, you know, this is kind of a once-in-a-life kind of thing, or you might do this again, but this is a big deal kind of trip. This isn't just a drive.
Right. They're coming slowly.
It's
only been about a week and a half, but yeah, I've learned a couple things about myself, and you know, some things have been magnified, like my needing to get out there and try harder to meet people and do things like that. So, you know, some kind of personal work I'm working on there.
Interesting. Well, you know, be patient, be kind to yourself. I mean, you know, you've made a pretty big leap here by just getting in a van and heading off. And putting yourself in the middle of nowhere.
Right. And I need to remember that. You know, and some parts are, you know, when so far in most of southern Oregon and along the coast there and on the coast up to Seattle, it's great because you're distracted by the amazing scenery and all this stuff to look at around you.
Mm-hmm.
And in so far in this kind of eastern part of Washington, it's pretty desolate. There isn't much going on. So it's a little harder to kind of come up with things to do.
Well, you know, when I was driving cross country when I moved out here, about 12, 15 years ago, and of course you come across and there are places where there's nothing going on, right? Visually, it's not as interesting. So I made up little games. One game I would pick up is I would think as I was driving, if I were to pick up and kill a hitchhiker, where would I bury the body? And so I would keep an eye out on the side of the road for the area that looked like would be a good place to bury it. So I'm not saying that would be a game you'd have to play, but just those are the kinds of things that you can do.
I don't think that's a game most sane people should play. Where's the best place that you came up with to bury a body?
Is it called a berm? Like a mound of dirt on the side of the road I guess they'd been using some backhoes to try to put in some, I guess, irrigation pipes, but they were fairly large irrigation kind of pipes. And I thought to myself, if I got there at night, because there's nobody around, it's middle of nowhere, I could put the body in the pipe, and then maybe they would find her, maybe not. In which case, it would just kind of eventually decompose and be part of your water system, and so we'd all be drinking a little bit of this guy. It was a guy,
now,
by
when,
the way. I killed a guy.
When did you do this trip?
When?
Yeah.
Well, there is no statute of limitations on this stuff, so I just made it.
No, I find it interesting that this memory of yours is on instant recall. You didn't even have to think about where you'd buried the body.
Yeah, no, I'm just saying this is what I would have done. That's all I'm saying. This is what I would have.
It was innocent speculation.
Oregon would be a good place because there's piles of burning trash everywhere.
Exactly.
You just throw the body on top of the piles of burning trash.
Okay, there you go. See you.
And that's tough to ID. Dude, when you're done, you got really no forensics there.
I'm just saying that there's fun can be had all over the place. Wherever you go, you can have a little bit of fun.
Is this the man who was just talking to us about the innocence and beauty of the banana splits?
I don't know. Do you remember the banana splits?
The dessert?
He's too young.
He is too young. He's a baby. He's a baby. So we'll be talking to you next week. You're gonna try to find some local radio stations and get a little airtime once you get outside the big cities. Yeah.
Sure.
I think you got to do this, dude.
That's something I can work on.
Because you got an interesting story. I mean, the hardest thing I think to remember is that from your point of view, what you're doing seems fairly normal and pedestrian. But for people who are not doing this, this is a big deal. This is a grand adventure. L'aventure de grand.
If I show up speaking like that, I'm going to get my ass beat in some
places.
Well,
that would be bad.
At least you'll be touched.
Hey, listen, you got the knife and the bat. You know, I think that puts you one up.
Touched by a Hell's Angel. Now there's a show. That's a show.
That is a show.
Well, you know, don't be too long on the road because, as you well know, Phil Hendry is quitting radio. And
yes.
To pursue his fabulous NBC sitcom. And so he'll be back in radio probably in about 3 or 4 months, and he is going to need people. And and I think that if you do this trip right, you'll optimize your return to synchronize with his return to the medium where he can succeed. And you
got a
job.
That's a plan. I'll keep it in the back of my head as well.
All right. So next week, a week from now, where do we expect to be?
I will be probably somewhere in Nevada, outside Vegas, probably in northern Nevada.
That's not a week's drive, is it?
No, but Thursday I need to be in Vegas, so.
Oh, because
that's the bachelor party.
Right.
Right.
Ah.
So things are going to start to pick up come next Thursday for sure.
You never know, Jason. You might meet some girl at the bachelor party. Forget it.
I mean, no, but I mean, talk about a line. Like, you know, I can only take you as far as the end of my penis. No, I mean, I can take you as far as Australia. And if she goes, that's fine. That's where I was going. You're in, baby. You're in.
Can you drive to Australia these days?
But she has no sense of geography, and that puts you one step ahead with her. That's the beauty. When they answer that positively, you're in.
When they don't know geography, they can't measure either. That's all I'm saying. All right, so next week you'll be in Vegas?
Yes.
Vegas, baby.
I'll be in Vegas.
And
and tomorrow morning will be the first KSCO reappearance.
Very exciting. You looking forward to that?
Yeah, I am. That should be very interesting.
It should be a lot of fun. What time is that, do you know?
6:45 a.m.
6:45 a.m. It's KSCO.com. If people want to go over there, they can listen to the stream live. Is that right?
Yes, they can.
All right. Well, I think we're going to have to do that.
Yeah. Tell Kay
Actually,
I love her.
I think
her.
The most interesting thing that's happened so far on my trip is Robin getting in fights on my blog.
What do you mean? What do you mean?
Robin's going back and forth with the guy named Mr. Biggs.
I didn't go back and forth.
Hey, there's a little. There's
no,
a little
there,
bit of
no,
back
there,
and forth.
No, there was no back and forth. I delivered a death blow. I completely overreacted, and that was the end of it.
Who's Mr. Biggs, Jason?
Mr. Biggs is actually John and Ken's technical director on the John and Ken show on KFI. He's the board op for them.
All right. I knew it was somebody in radio.
Yeah.
Technical
radio
director. I like that, rather than board op.
He actually is a technical director.
Is he?
As opposed to a lot of them who just are board ops, yes.
Okay. So this isn't a case of being a sanitary engineer or something. He actually he holds this lofty title for a reason.
Correct.
Excellent.
You know, I thought about whether I was going to get into it, and I realized that the internet creates a kind of anonymity that allows people to write things that they would never say to your face. And so,
oh, I know that very well. That's how I got fired from one of my jobs.
There you go. And so I don't know Mr. Big, but I'm guessing if you had a party at your place down in L.A. and I was there and I met Mr. Big and I was telling him what I was doing, and he would never go, 2-hour podcast, what the fuck are you thinking, dude? You know, they, nobody would say that to your face. They would go, really? People listen to that? You know, they would sort of be, you know, incredulous, but they would be inquisitive. And
right.
So I thought we talked. I thought there's really no reason to respond. It was, I think he realized it was not appropriate place to make comments. If he wants to listen to the show and make comments about it, we invite comments. Robin@schnauzerlogic.com. You know, everybody's fine, but none of us are getting paid to do this. You know, we're doing this because we love it, and we got, you know, so many hundreds of people who were digging it too. That's cool. You don't like it? That's fine. No problem.
But at least he's listening.
But did you know that my ass did not smell like cherries?
I did not know that.
The AP picked up that story.
Yeah. There's a lot of fruits that my ass doesn't smell like, but cherry is apparently number one answer.
Check the big board.
And which one of us was Adam Carolla, since you brought it up at this point?
Which one of you guys? I think that would probably be Sean.
Oh, Sean's Adam Carolla.
And you would be Mr. Giggles.
I'm the giggling idiot. Okay, cool. Yeah.
Wait, and who? I thought I was giggling boy.
No, I think that has to go for Robin. Because actually, you know, when I'm on hold waiting for the segment to start, I can hear you guys kind of talking in the background underneath the music.
Right.
And all I hear is... Robin's laugh cuts through everything.
It's my trademark, dude.
It is. And it's wonderful.
All right. So,
oh, are we ending this on a bad note? I didn't mean to create any animosity.
No, there's no animosity. There's no animosity. Okay. I accept Mr. Big's apology.
Okay, good.
And next week, you're going to be in Nevada fighting radioactive mutants for the last box of Triscuits, which will be in your van. That is correct. I understand that is going to be the scenario.
Actually, it's wheat thins, but yes, you are mostly correct.
It's vegetarian, my friend. There you go. Well, we love you. Be safe out there.
Jason,
thank you.
Jason, really quick, any close calls on the road driving-wise?
Parviz comes alive. Forget about Frampton. Here comes Parviz.
I was going to say, that's the best double album I ever heard.
Parviz comes alive.
No, any close calls? Anybody
How
cut you off?
You?
No. I haven't gotten any tickets yet, knock on wood.
Good.
No close calls driving-wise.
Good.
All right. Well, listen, we want you to be safe out there.
Thank you.
And
don't forget to check out Carrot Top.
Be safe in there.
We're very safe, my friend.
Wear condoms.
You have a terrific week.
Thank you.
See you, Jason.
All right, we love you, my friend. Take care of yourself.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Bye. All right, there you go.
I'm glad we got that cleared up.
Did we?
I guess so.
I guess. All right, so now we've played this little bed thing here about 5 times now. Now I never want to hear it again.
Who does this? This is like Hanson? Who does this?
Banana Split piece of music.
I don't know, but we're almost done with it. So what we'll do is we'll take a break, come back on the other side, and we'll talk to Parviz. You're listening to Schnauzer Logic. Stick around.
Stick around for more Schnauzer Logic. We'll be right back.
more fun than flushing the toilet while your spouse is in the shower.
Oh, sorry.
Schnauzer Logic.
Welcome back. We are just about 1 hour into this episode of Schnauzer Logic, the podcast, being recorded on Wednesday, the 10th of May, 2006. Robin Goldstein, Parviz Vitali, Sean Meehan, and you, Son of Vista.
Son of Vista.
Son of Vista.
Son of Vista.
We're talking about Jason a little bit. The story that you told during the break, I thought was interesting. If you can share that little...
Sure.
The advice a psychologist gave.
Right. I was reading a self-help book written by a psychologist who, as one of the chapters in the book, was relating a story where she was approached by a patient who was having difficulty meeting women.
He'd just gotten divorced, I think you said.
Right, right. He'd just coming back from a divorce. There was a woman in his office that he was attracted to, but he was so out of practice and so uncomfortable, he just couldn't even ask her to coffee. And she said, look, I can go into therapy with you, and we can do this for months and months and months and probably get some results, or I can give you the quick fix. And that turned out to be the ticket. And it was this. Go out to a mall. Go out to this big nearby mall. Go into Macy's or Nordstrom's. Go into a posh department store and go up to 100 women who you know are going to turn you down for a date. And go approach them and rack up 100 date failures and find women who you just sense innately. These women are out of your league. Go up to the most beautiful, most glamorous. Don't let a wedding ring dissuade you. Go up to these women and, invite them to dinner. And it was a miracle cure. You know, he needed to get comfortable with the idea of being rejected.
Right.
And to understand that you live through that. It's okay. And I was just thinking about, because we were talking about how Jason is he's a sensitive guy. He's kind of a shy guy. He's great on the radio.
He's a great guy.
He's a great guy.
He's funny and...
He's incredibly funny, a terrific human being, but he doesn't have that outgoing, extroverted personality that shines through at parties or something.
If he doesn't know you.
Right.
If he knows you, he has that. So he's, I think, shy. I mean...
He's shy.
That's a fair way of putting it.
Yeah.
And so this is kind of a little, not aversion therapy, it's the opposite of aversion therapy.
Right.
It's immersion therapy.
It's immersion therapy. So Jason, I think we all kind of agreed that you need to just go up to 10 or 20 people.
No, you said 100. It's funnier if it's 100.
Okay. Okay, you will be busy most of this trip being rejected by people. But you need to go up to people and engage them with the understanding that they are going to reject you.
So just to get him started, he's got 3 in this room.
That's
so
right.
You only have 97 to go. That's what we were saying, right? That's what we were...
You got a head start on this.
You know, it's funny that that I had not heard you tell that story before, and after I got divorced and went through a lot of dating, and I'm also kind of shy. I think I pretend that I'm not, because if I don't know somebody and I'm in a social situation where I don't know people, then I act like I'm a brave person, right? So this becomes an improv. I go, I'm going to be in this role. I'm going to be the brave, funny person, and I go out and I act it. And so it's not me. It's this portrayal of me. And then you get to know me later on. You go, Jesus, you were better when you were acting as real. You're kind of not fun to be with. But along the way, I thought to myself, I don't understand why it is that we think that every third person that we meet in our life is going to be a perfect match for us. Jesus, where did we get the idea that that was going to be what the number was? You know, and I started to talk to friends of mine, men and women, and I said, how many people do you think are right? Because you have a list. I have a list. Everyone has some kind of list of what's important to them, even if it's not written down. And I said, on that list, do you think like every fifth person that walks through the door is going to meet all of the elements? People, everyone go, wait, now you're nuts. Of course not. And I said, right. So supposing you knew that you were going to meet the perfect person, but you had to meet 1,000 other people first. You had to go on 1,000 dates before you met the right person, and then you were guaranteed to meet the right person. What would you do? And I posed this. It was my early days of my Zen study, so it had this kind of Zen quality. I thought the answer is you'd get started. right? If you knew that it was going to take 1,000 people, you get started. I probably shared this before. It's the same idea, which is you have to get over the nervousness of, or the expectations, right? Not put too much expectation, too much nervousness, too much anything. And I think that's the only way to do it. Because everybody, you know, they're more nervous of you than you are of them. The rats, I mean.
Well, you know, it has manifestations in all parts of life. We think about big game jitters. You know, we think about teams that haven't gone to the postseason and how they tend to not do as well. They're playing the same game. They're playing on fields they've played before. They're doing all this stuff. But there is an enormity to this that they are unfamiliar with.
Right.
Experienced teams, often with lesser talent, will beat more talented, less experienced teams just because of the ease they feel when they play the game.
Right.
They've been there. They know this. They know that even when you lose, it's okay. Your wife doesn't leave you. The kids don't die.
Right.
Nothing happens. You don't lose your valuable endorsements.
That's your expectation, too? I mean, that's been your experience?
You know, ever since I started music, which was 12 years ago, my confidence level went through the roof.
Really?
Yeah. Before that, I was... I don't believe anybody knew who I was in high school, early college.
Interesting.
It was like I was terribly shy. I had no... But it's... And you and I did comedy, right?
Well, some would say.
Yeah, some would say. That's the most terrifying, is to be alone on the stage. But one thing I remember thinking was, yeah, there's all these eyes looking at me, but there's only a pair of them that are thinking. In other words, like, only one person has thought about me, whether I'm funny or not. This other person has thought of me whether I'm funny or not. This other person is probably thinking what they're going to have for dinner later on tonight. Not everybody is in unison as to whether I... So if I worry about what everybody's thinking about me, chances are not everybody is truly, truly thinking about me at that moment.
Right.
Yeah, it's not a great monolithic gestalt of critique that's going on out there.
I did want to say, though, you said you had to go out on 1,000 dates before you found the right one.
Yes.
Okay, first of all, that's pretty lame because you're going to run out of money. By the time you find the right one, you'll be living under the freeway, pretty much.
Well, that may
that
be
would be the right one.
Maybe where the right person is. Well, the idea was...
I mean, 1,000 dinners? Come on, Robin. Fucker.
No, they don't give me 1,000 coffee dates. They were not 1,000...
$5 a coffee. That's a lot of money.
It's $5,000.
1,000 Dutch dates.
Don't you think $5,000 is worth to find the woman of your dreams, the man of your dreams, the schnauzer of your dreams?
I guess. And you know what? I probably spent $5,000 of my life to find the woman of my dreams.
Exactly. And you found her. Is that right?
That's correct.
That's all I'm saying.
I don't know if... Yeah. I don't know if it was dreams, but it was just the one that fit me that day.
Oh, man.
No! You know, no. It's beautiful.
Wait, I'm going to save you. Hold on. We're going to save you here. Hold on.
When the ice comes and the snow, and it's 48
You need to kiss her and get her some flowers for what she just
and
did for you.
And they hear the moan and whine of the frozen water line. Then the plumber is the man who saves them all.
That's me.
Oh, the plumber is the man. The plumber is the man. Down into the cellar he must crawl. He must crawl. He is not sleek or slim, and they all look down on him. The plumber is the man who saves them all.
He's not sleek or slim.
And they all make fun of him.
Wow.
And
the odor makes you blush and you can't. That's a plumber, though. That's a residential plumber. Commercial.
And they are like gods.
They are.
Yeah, they're...
You know that movie that Arnold Schwarzenegger was in? You know, the plumber. He did not play a residential plumber. He played a commercial plumber, man.
He was a residential Terminator, commercial Terminator. All right, let me get to my story. Is that cool?
Yeah, that's where I played the music.
I thought I was going to get a big intro.
Well, that wasn't
what
a big intro.
Well,
come on, dude, you have your own story. You have your
I
own
know.
Song.
Did you say own stool?
No, I said you have your own song. Okay. And we interviewed the woman who sings this.
We did.
Would you rather just listen to it for the segment instead?
Just let me hear the next line.
The plumber is the man. The plumber is the man.
Commercial.
A scholar's not the person you would call. You would call.
Great, I'm not a scholar.
Without a plumbing brain, we would all go down the drain. And the plumber is the man who saves us all.
And now, with his fabulous weekly plumbing update, we give you Parvis, the commercial plumber.
All right, thank you. So last week, I was sitting here, and I gave you guys a story about the gentleman who's going to get fired because of me. So that was Wednesday. The following day, Thursday, I had to see him. And anyway, so I get to work. I was trying to avoid the whole thing, and I was called in, and they kind of put me on the spot and told me, is it true that this happened, this happened, this happened? I said, yeah, it did happen. Well, this is what I got in the last week at work. It seemed relatively fishy, and it seemed like it was a conspiracy because this guy, I learned later, that got fired because of me.
He did get fired because of me. Shit.
Well, because of my mistake, he got fired. And you know, I'll tell you, the next day, I was so nervous to see him because I thought he was going to...
Tom.
Right. I thought Tom was just going to be, I'm a dick or whatever. He was the nicest guy, and he kept on telling me, don't worry about it. It's not your fault. It's not your fault. It's right. My fault. It's my fault because I should have seen this and blah, 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 blah. I found out later on that a lot of people above Tom didn't necessarily like Tom. And so they put him in a position to fail. They put him in a position where he didn't work on these air conditioning heating units pretty much ever. First time he's ever worked on it. I'm brand new to the industry. So they stuck me with Tom. We're working on these. We're screwing up all of these. And so now they're looking at Tom like, you were working with an apprentice. This got screwed up. You weren't on top of it. You're fired. And so I'm starting to believe like, wow, I think I was used to get rid of Tom.
You're the patsy.
You're a tool.
Wait a second.
You were the Oswald.
Yes. So the guy who, Tom works with another gentleman named Tony.
Okay.
And Tony wasn't terribly supportive of Tom and wasn't backing him up.
All right.
Tony is not our boss. Tony is just a coworker.
All right.
And I ended up working with Tony this whole week after Tom left. And I tell you, I look at Tony a totally different light. I think he's a...
Stand-up guy?
No.
He's a snake in the grass, isn't he?
I think so.
A plumber snake.
And so I'm on the edge
Sorry.
Here. I'm on the verge that... Because in the last few days, I felt Tony has been setting me up to fail.
To get back for what you did to Tom?
No,
or?
Just because I think Tony's in control, freak. I think he's like a...
You think he's scared of you?
No, I just think... I just
threatened
think,
by
I think
a younger, more virile
see,
guy.
Possibly.
Okay.
I just think...
Is he bald? Tony bald?
No, he's a hair magnet.
There you go. So that means not a lot of testosterone. Whereas you are the epitome of testicles.
That's correct.
That's all I'm saying.
That's beautifully put. So Tom has been setting me up, I feel. For example, let me just give you a quick example. I'm working on this project, and then Tom pulls me away and says, do this. Go find this certain...
But did he say Simon Says do this?
No. He just said, Parviz, I need you to go find me...
That creates a problem.
I need you to go find me this size coupling, right? So I'm spending 30 minutes
Simon
finding a coupling that doesn't exist. I come back 30 minutes later, I come up to Tony and go, I can't find... He goes, oh, yeah, I forgot to order. It's not there. So I spent 30 minutes looking for something where he could have probably followed me after 5 minutes and said, hey, Parviz, come back. It's not there.
So he's fucking with you.
So, yeah, he's
so
making
I
you
come
look
back,
bad.
Right. So my manager could see, what's taking you so long to finish this project? Well, Tony's got me out there 30 minutes looking for something. So all these couple things like that during the week was going on. I was like, wow, this guy seems like a little rat.
So did you saw like through the safety harness?
I kind of played him a little bit this week.
Excellent.
And some other guy was coming up to me and they said, in a joking way, they go, hey, Parviz, you learning anything from Tony? I said, no, not really. I am learning, though, that I got to be on my toes. I think somebody's got my back or somebody's trying to get my back because they're going to stab me someday or something. And Tony's like, what is that supposed to mean? So I'm just saying.
Yeah, even I don't know what you're talking about, dude, actually. And I'm
exactly.
Sitting here.
So I'm just saying.
It's
like,
very damn low.
I'm just saying, like, whatever happened to Tom is going to happen to me. And so.
Well, they wouldn't do that to you.
Well, they shouldn't do that to me. And I hope they see through all the bullshit. It's just weird. It's just a really weird... But I did actually have a nice week. I had a productive day yesterday. Today wasn't that great, but it's been a better week. Nobody got fired. No tools were burned. So it was relatively a good week. I'm going at this job week by week. You know, before my updates were, hey, we got a new yogurt, a new cheese. Now it's like, all right, look, nobody got fired.
You long for those days, don't you? It's not the days of wine and roses. It's
no,
the days of...
Of copper and steel.
Wow.
Piping.
Well, you know, I think people tend to think that soap opera is the province of dynasty. You know, mm-hmm. it's the province of rich millionaires and you know, power brokers. But it happens everywhere.
It happens,
and
it happens everywhere.
That kind of drama.
Yeah.
It really does. People are evil out there.
Well, they're addicted to the drama, so they create chaos.
Yes.
Okay. Right? I think they create the chaos because that keeps the drama going.
Yes.
Yeah, they're addicted to that. They also want to just look so good to their bosses.
I think it's part of it. But I think even if they didn't look good for their bosses, they just liked having...
I think they like the intrigue.
Yeah.
I think they like the excitement and the intrigue. I have an aunt who works for a Catholic school. And there's a takeover of certain, you know, parishioners of the Catholic school. They're working their political magic to pull strings and all this. And I thought, oh, for goodness sakes, it's a little Catholic school. But they feel the need to exercise their power and have this intrigue in their sides. And there are double agents in this story. And there are all kinds of components of a world-class thriller going on in this little bitty Catholic school. It's kind of pathetic when you look at it from the outside, but they're clearly invested.
Sure. Well, I mean, how do you get through the day otherwise? But here's... So you've been there, and it's 5 weeks now.
I'm on my sixth week.
6 weeks. So 6 weeks now. So what do you know how to do?
Well, I comfortably know how to solder. I comfortably know how to put together some certain VAVs, which are heating, air conditioning kits.
Okay.
But for the most part, it's like... I mean, I can tell you I know how to, like, cut pipe, but...
Well, yeah, I mean, tell us that stuff.
Okay, I know how to cut pipe.
These are things I don't know how to do.
All right, well, so I know how to cut pipe, I know how to solder, and I know how to take orders pretty good.
Can you use a threader?
No, not yet. And I know how to, you know, I'm starting to understand parts and the terminology on some things and stuff like that.
Now, do you go to classes as well?
I will be going to classes.
All right, not yet.
September.
September, you start your classes.
And that's going to be 3 hours a night, two nights a week.
All right.
And that's going to pretty much, if I was to start work when I started class, I would be going along side by side learning. But now I'll be 6 months into my job. So when it comes to class and they teach me how to solder in class, I should be well.
You're
going to
be going great guns.
Yeah. So that's cool. That's cool. I'll be ahead of the curve in class. Because not everybody started with me that day. People are starting every week as we go on. And class starts in September. Some guy will probably start in August. And then a month later, he starts class. And here I am 6 months into it. So
he'll have just blown up his first orbital.
Right. And right. I would have done maybe three or four by then.
Maybe Tony comes back. Maybe it's like in a shooting gallery, right? When these guys get fired and they go down. And then, like, you leave. And it's like, what the fuck, dude? It's like, Tony's back. It may be like the beginning of Monsters, Inc. like, they're not a real plumber. It's like the plumber in the bed and, you know, and...
So it's so far so good. So far so good.
All right.
I mean, you know, it's been extremely interesting.
Very interesting.
Only 6 weeks into it, I'm already part of a conspiracy.
So,
and Oliver Stone had nothing to do with this.
And your quality of life at home?
Richard Donner had nothing to do with this.
With Melanie?
Perfect.
No strain? You're not bringing this work home with you in any way?
No, she's wonderful because she hears all the drama, and I have an ear to talk to, and you know, everything's fine. Yeah. She's kind of like, do you want to go back to Safeway? I'm like, no. I mean, I don't want to go back.
No.
Then you can't use that tone of voice because it's not convincing. Do you want to go back to Safeway?
No.
No, I'm pleased.
No, I don't want to go back.
There we go.
It's a challenge. It's going to be a challenge because I said on the outset that nobody knows who I am. They don't even know my personality.
Well, you're fairly shy too, actually.
No, I'm fairly shy, and I could be sometimes outspoken. If I have some good ammo, I could really attack I can probably outshow people's true colors if I really wanted to. But they don't know who I am, and so I'm just kind of just listening, learning, watching.
Cipher.
Yeah, I'm a sniper. Is that what you called me?
A cipher.
Cipher.
Well, I could be a sniper as well. I am Persian. Because I'm thinking I could watch and learn and see how people's personalities come out. And then I'll say, oh, okay, that's right. I remember, you are full of shit.
So we're going to try to get someone on from a plumbing union.
That'd be cool.
I think Local 582 in Long Beach, California, Southern California.
I will bet that we should retell these stories, right, and ask this person. And he would probably say, Oh, yeah. That happens here, too.
That happens everywhere?
I don't know.
Because we've been talking about it after the show, and after last week's program, we talked about it, and I said, you know, I mean, you've got a great spirit, so you're really digging what you're doing here, but it seems to me like each week they're setting up traps for you to fail in new and unusual ways, ultimately ending in your death. You know, that's how the game ends. You know, it's some kind of very bad, you know, game show on the WB. You know, and there's no prizes or shit like that. And I thought to myself, after 5 years of this, it's not like they're going to go, okay, did you get anybody fired? Check. Did you, you know, lose any limbs? Check. Did you? All right, here's your plumbing certification. You know, like, it seems like a weird way. And apprenticeship is really a sacred form of education in the crafts and the arts. I mean, it goes back to the old country, and so there aren't many places. Like, nobody takes you under your wing as an attorney, right? I don't know, as an illustrator, did they really take you under their wing? Or
no, not really.
I mean, there are people who will teach you along the way.
Sure, and as I'm sure there are with attorneys.
Sure,
you know, there are
sure.
people who will sort of mentor a young attorney and. I've certainly had illustrators who have helped me understand
right.
certain aspects of art. But you're right. I mean, most fields of endeavor in this culture are taught in mass. They aren't...
In school, either yeah. in a school, trade school or university, what have you. You come out with a degree and it's sort of like, hey, college boy, so you know how to do one. You know how to write a brief, do you? You know, that kind of situation. Of course, he's like, no, I don't know shit. All I know how to do is pass the bar. You know, I don't know how to do any more than that. But the trades really are to teach you in a very sacred, because I think work is a sacred task. And so I'm surprised that it's left in this way where it becomes sort of like a novella, you know, some kind of Spanish novella. exactly. So I'm surprised by the whole process here. So
yeah. Well, let's find out. Let's ask somebody else.
So we're going to try. So we've made a request to the communications office for Local 582 of the pipe fitter and steam. What's the name of the union? You must be a member.
Steam fitter pipe fitter union.
.com. All right. So we made her put in a request, an email request, and we'll see if we can get somebody on. If not, we'll find somebody else.
Yeah.
But I want to try to gauge your experience, because, I mean, I know lots of plumbing apprentices, but not commercial plumbing apprentices. They're all residential. So you're the only commercial plumbing apprentice that I've ever met.
They're out there.
Getting people probably fired every day.
And the funny thing, now everybody's on pins and needles at my job. They're like, oh, don't hang out with Parviz. You'll get fired.
He destroys lives.
All right, here's what we'll do. We'll take a break. We'll play some tunage. When we come back, with any luck, we'll be talking with Hong Kong.
Ding, 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 ding.
Excellent. And Robin Goldstein. Be a doppelganger. Be like the trainee in the box. That's on the menu tonight, by the way, Training in the Box. It's
Will one of you be the evil Robin Goldstein, and so that...
One of us be the stupid giggling Robin Goldstein. I've never spoken with Robin Goldstein. I've only sent email to Robin Goldstein. This will be a very... This may be my long-lost doppelganger. That's a German term, right?
Yes.
What does it mean?
I
don't
double.
You speak German? Double.
I don't. Yeah, yeah.
It means double.
Yeah, but
double ganga.
Yeah. Ask Jim Cameron.
Okay, we'll take a break. We'll be back on the other side with me. You're listening to Schnauzer Logic. Stick around.
That's the trouble around here. Talk, talk, talk. Oh, sometimes I think I must go mad.
We'll be back with more Schnauzer Logic.
the road stories.
Crack me up.
Oh, yeah.
They're funny.
Keeps me entertained.
Funny, funny comedy.
Those tree-hugging sissies.
And now your host, Brian Cox. Welcome to Road Stories of the Real Highway Comics. I'm Brian Cox, and we've been getting quite a few emails, people wondering how to get into the business of stand-up comedy. And also, I got a few, let me tell you, on how I got into the business of stand-up comedy. Well, I can tell you my story, and you can glean what you want from it. I was 12 years old. My parents saw an ad in the local newspaper asking for people to audition for a local entertainment group that would be performing at the local fair that summer. So I went down and auditioned. I didn't have much material. My mom and I gleaned stuff out of the Reader's Digest. I put voices to it, and boom, there I had an act. Anyway, I auditioned and got a slot on the show. Oh, man, was I excited. 4 shows a day, and what do you get? Filthy, dirty, you're in a tent, you're at the local fair, dust blowing around. I tell you, I was living the dream. Then one day, I get interviewed by 2 morning men from a local radio station. And I end off the interview by asking them a question. I said, what would one have to do to get into radio? I think it would be a good vehicle for my comedy and impersonations. Well, they said, go to school. So I finished high school, applied at broadcasting school, and wouldn't you know it, I get a job offer from a radio station to do all nights, and I get the acceptance letter from the broadcasting school the very same day. So I took the radio station job. I stuck with that for about 20 years. Then, you know, when you're a radio personality, you get asked out a lot to do MC work for this foundation or that fundraiser or whatever. And I started throwing in a little bit of humor, a few voices and stuff. And it ended up, I got asked out more to do the humor thing than the MCing thing. So I thought, let's go down to the local comedy club. Well, I had to come up with an act. I put one of those together, phoned down to the local club, and got a slot on their open mic night. When you work in radio, you get to know a lot of people. So what did I do? Thinking I was the funniest guy since Lenny Bruce, anyway, I decide to invite all my friends down to the comedy club to watch Big Bride do his comedy stuff. Well, there's about 8 other guys waiting to get up on stage at the comedy thing. They'd been working their material out for about 6 months. I, on the other hand, had been working mine out for about 5 hours. Anyway, thinking I was going to be great, I get to the comedy club, they get up, all my friends are there to support me. Oh, how nice. I'm starting to get nervous. What do? I take a drink. Oh, yes, alcohol. I have another one, and another one. And all the guys are getting up on stage, and they're doing just fine. And then the MC calls my name out. Well, I came out of the bathroom just in time to hear that, thank goodness, because I was in there throwing up because I was so nervous, and I was pretty drunk. Anyway, I get up on stage and I trip as I'm getting up there. I fall down. That, my friends, was the biggest laugh I got for the next 5 minutes. And if you think it's cold in Canada, you should have been at that comedy club. I'll tell you, it was mighty chilly with that audience reaction. The MC comes up to me at the end of the show and goes, hey, you had some pretty good material there, but hey, just do yourself a favor. Don't drink so much before you get up there. The audience actually has to understand you. How can I put this? Lesson learned for sure. Oh, and don't invite all your friends down until you've smoothed your act out a bit. Yeah, I still think to this very day that some of them aren't talking to me. After that fiasco, I decided to maybe lay off the stand-up comedy for a while and went back to the radio emceeing thing. And then I was out doing that in a small town, and they had a comic come up, and I had to bring him up on stage. So I did my job. I got out there. I made the ladies laugh, and the guys are laughing and everything. And then I brought the comedian up.
Well, he saw what I did up there, and he goes, "Hey, I'm an agent in Edmonton, Alberta. How would you like to work for me? I can put you out on the road." Ooh, bitten by the bug? No kidding. Man, I was in there like a flash. And, found out that he pays like $50 a show. You got to supply your own car, your own gas, and there's no meals, supplied. I thought, hey, there's a heck of a deal. I got to pay my dues. I'm going on the road. So he hired me to open for other comics. And I did. Worked my way up through the ranks, and now proud to say, folks, that I am a headliner. Yeah, still paying for my own gas, still paying for my own meals, my own car, and sometimes my own accommodation. That's the life of a Canadian entertainer. But you know what really makes this all worthwhile, this business of comedy, is when you're on that stage and people are laughing, really laughing. They forget about the crap that goes on in their day-to-day lives, and they're laughing about one subject. We're all one big happy family with one common goal, to have a good time. Thank you for listening to Road Stories. I'm Brian Cox.
Serving the universe from the top of the Empire State Building.
Actually, it's a second bedroom with some bath mats taped to the wall.
And broadcasting loud to all time zones around the world in stereo.
It's a medium bitrate podcast. Oh, and it's mono.
This is
Schnauzer Logic!
Welcome back. We are, what the hell are we? We're 33 minutes into this episode of Schnauzer Logic, the podcast. Robin Goldstein, Sean Meehan, Parviz Vitali.
Son of Easter
Robin.
You
digging this episode of Comic Road Stories?
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely.
Well, you know, there's a rule about comedy on the road that I want to share with you, but I totally forgot it.
Yeah.
I think I was too engaged by Brian Cox. When we had Brian Cox on the show, that was like 3 or 4 weeks ago. And
That long ago?
I think so. Was it not? That was that was a very illuminating program, I thought, in that Brian Cox portrayed, in the interview with us, how incredibly difficult it is to be a Canadian comedian. Largely because most of Canada doesn't have the kind of venues you need to support a local comedy community. And you really do. Canada, I think, more so than the United States, because basically there's the East Coast of Canada and there's the West Coast of Canada. You know, Montreal, Toronto, Vancouver. And then the rest, with a couple of minor exceptions in between, is Rockies and tundra and, and fields of waving grain, but there's not a lot there. So if you're going to visit these little comedy spots in these little towns, it really is, it's a warrior's expedition just to get out there.
Yeah. It's kind of like what the West used to be, the Wild West.
Yeah.
Right? The Wild West of comedy. All right. So on our line right now, we've got, let's push down the button and see if it's working here. We're supposed to have Robin Goldstein. Robin, is that you?
Yeah, that's me. Can you hear me? I'm here in Hong Kong. It's a very big delay.
Yeah, you can hear the delay. It's
there's a lot of feedback.
A lot of feedback. We'll try to go. So what's happening there in Hong Kong?
Well, it's good Chinese food. That's all I got to say about it.
There are a lot of Chinese people there, aren't there?
There are a lot of Chinese. Wait, hold on.
There are a lot of Chinese people there. Hold on. Hold on a second here. Wait. That's better. All right, can you hear me now?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's amazing the intimacy that this new technology provides us. I remember a time not that long ago where you had to actually make reservations to make a call to a foreign country.
Hold on a second here. Turn down. Bingo. Domokato. Yeah, I'm sorry. Well, he was having my dry cleaning delivered.
Yeah, by a Japanese guy.
Yeah. It's international. Hong Kong, is the... they call it the golden entryway to the rear ends of the world, and it doesn't translate well. So,
it's very cosmopolitan, in other words.
Yes, absolutely, and and an hour later they enter you again.
There's a lot of technical problems here, but I think that we're going to try and work through some of them.
Because
I can't always understand completely what you're saying, but it is just a miracle. It's wonderful to have you. Now, you're a travel writer, correct?
I am a travel writer. Hold on a second. I got a plane coming up in.
For people out there in the audience, you know, boy, those aircraft, they come right
very
over
low,
downtown.
Very low.
Yeah.
If you ever seen the photographs of Hong Kong, they fly it over the center of the island and they come around through the back end. Pretty much everything in Hong Kong comes in through the back end. The dogs, the ducks, anything with the letter G comes in through the back end.
That's... I tell you, that's because it's in another hemisphere, isn't it?
It is. You know, I've never spoken to Robin. Is Robin there?
Yes, Robin is here.
Hey, dude, how you doing?
I'm fine. How you doing?
Good. This is. It's amazing that we have the same voice because I think I'm like almost 20 years older than you are.
Yeah, something like 20 years older, but I think we came from the same genetic pool. You know, same name and all that stuff.
Makes sense to me. How come you keep getting cut off like that?
My fingers aren't quite big enough to push both buttons at the same time.
All right, that makes sense to me. Is Sean still there?
I mean, is Sean still there?
Oh yeah, I'm right here. And let me tell you, this is fascinating. Now, what other places have you written about in the? Because as a travel writer, you must go all over the world, see all kinds
all
of locations.
World, all over the world, I'm scarfing down free meals wherever I can. I visited the McDonald's in Bangladesh. I visited the Kentucky Fried Chicken in Bangladesh. I visited the Pizza Hut in Bangladesh. So pretty much the fine cuisines of the world, everywhere that you can be, I've been there. Over.
That's absolutely wonderful. I know that I'm looking at some of your data here, and it says that you had an opportunity. You were one of the last people to dine at the McDonald's in Afghanistan,
yes.
Right, and Pakistan, right before they were burned by looters.
If you look closely at the photograph, you can see me behind Ronald McDonald licking my fingers from the last of what is effectively a chicken nugget, although they don't have chicken in that part of the world. I'm not really sure what the animal is, but it's mighty, mighty tasty.
So you've been at the center of cultural and political disturbances all around the world in your quest for free food.
In my quest for free fast food, yes, exactly. Is Parviz there? I've heard a lot about Parviz.
I'm right here.
How you doing, Parviz?
Very good. I have a little theme music for you, Robin.
You do? Please.
Ding, 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 ding.
You know, it's funny you should do that because I did that when I got off the plane, and about 18 hours later, I was able to remove the truncheon from my ass.
They're harsh. They don't have a sense of humor there, do they?
Well, they do. It's just not English. Apparently, it means something different in Chinese and Japanese. I don't know how that works. Over.
Every time, you know, it's funny with these long-distance transmissions, you do get that strange sense that after you say something, you have to say, stop.
Yes, and also you get the same sense that what you've said has just been said.
Stop.
Over. Listen, I need to go because, hold on a second. Ding Dao. Yes, I just ordered another beer. But it's great to talk to you guys. Life is good here, and maybe when I get back to the States, we'll have an opportunity to talk to each other. So, Sona Vista.
Sona Vista.
Sona Vista.
All right, take care.
Sona Vista, take care, Robin.
All right, Robin, bye-bye.
Boy, it's good that was quick because, you know, that's like $100 a minute.
At least. At least. I'm sorry I didn't get a chance to talk to him for more. Time.
That Robin really took over the show.
Oh, man. Did he ever? But I was surprised at how much he sounded like...
You know, strangely enough, I wasn't. But, hey, you know, wow. This is an amazing event. One of the reasons why this delightful comedy bit was sent your way...
It's really that is delightful.
Is because there's been an international technical crisis here, as we have been unable to make contact with Robin Goldstein, with the distant Hong Kong Robin Goldstein, because
all circuits are busy now. Please try your
it's
call again.
It's not my
later.
Fault.
It really wasn't.
It's not my fault.
He couldn't even enjoy Brian Cox Road Stories because he was so feverishly working
well, that's
to
not
get
why.
The connection.
No, that's not why. No, absolutely not. That's not why. All right, we are 40 minutes into the second hour of Schnauzerlodge of the podcast.
Is Robin waiting for us?
Yes. I suppose I could make the call on a regular line and just tell him that I can't get through.
Yeah.
I could try that.
Could you try it without 1010?
Yeah, but then I'm going to pay like a...
No, but just try it. See if it
just
works.
Just to fuck with them. Oh, I see. Okay. Well, hold on a second here. So you need to talk among your...
Well, one of the things that we wanted to talk about today, and I'm not sure whether we're going to get a chance, but...
Tom Cruise.
MI3 opened last week to not disastrous numbers, but clearly disappointing numbers.
Yes.
I think that it had an opening weekend that was just sub 50 million, 48, right. 49 million.
And they were hoping for 10 more.
Right. They were hoping for 10 or 15 more. I guess MI2 opened in the high 50s, and they anticipated a more significant opening than... Yep. Than the sequel, than the previous sequel.
You know what would have been very interesting is ever since Philip Seymour Hoffman won the Oscar for mm-hmm. Capote, I noticed that the trailers were full of Philip Seymour Hoffman, right? Hello? I bet you, I wonder if he was not even a part of the film and the villain was unknown. I wonder if it would have even gone less.
It's a very interesting question. Did what bump MI3 got come from the fact that an Academy Award winning actor was in it. I don't know, but obviously everyone out there knows, I hardly have to recap the blow by blow, but over the last year, Tom Cruise, who was a pretty private guy up to this point, I mean, I think everyone knew he was a Scientologist, and there was some stuff that came out about, you know, potential homosexuality. There was a little scandal that came out sort of over his, you know, his dealings with his ex-wife. But things really exploded in Tom Cruise's personal life in terms of him showing yeah. everyone his world when he Robin. Got into that little scuffle with Brooke Shields.
Oh, yep.
Hey, I think we're making technical progress, aren't we?
I think we're on the line with Robin Goldstein.
Hello.
Can you hear us?
Yay!
I can.
Well, we've had a difficult time in getting to you, and we're not going to have as much time as we would like to, but I know that you were up early this morning waiting for us. So, Sona Vista, ladies and gentlemen, my doppelganger, Robin Goldstein.
Sona
nice
Vista.
To be here.
Sona Vista, Robin.
Nice to meet you, Robin.
Nice to meet you, again.
When was it that I don't think we've actually spoken on the phone, but when did we exchange emails for the very first time? Do you remember?
I think it might have been my sophomore or junior year in college, which would have been around 95.
So over 10 years ago.
I got an email from you that commented on all these strange similarities. You'd gone to MIT, is that right?
I did go to MIT, yes.
And so forth. And at the time, there weren't that many people out there on the internet, so we were the only two Robin Goldsteins until the others came and invaded our space.
I likened it at the beginning of the show to the early days of the automobile, where people were driving around in the only two cars in Cincinnati managed to meet at the center of an intersection. So,
exactly.
And then just very recently, less than a month ago, I received an email for a Robin Goldstein, and I looked at the email, and I could tell from the body that it was supposed to be sent to a very similar but slightly different email address. I forwarded it along. It turned out it was you. You recognized me somehow and said, "Are you the Robin Goldstein from 10 years ago?" And I said, "Yes, guilty as charged." So, as I say, we don't have a whole lot of time today, but I did want to have an opportunity just to chat with you very briefly, because what you're doing is fascinating. Where you sort of came from is interesting, but you're a travel writer.
I am. I actually went to law school and kind of gave up the world of law for travel writing, which I'd actually been doing since I began college. I used to write for the Let's Go budget travel series.
Oh, sure.
And that was like the ultimate college summer job. You know, we'd get sent off for 7 weeks on our own on these itineraries around the world and write about it. It took me many years to realize that had actually been the best job I'd ever had.
Quite a scam, too. Do you have interest of being a writer, or was this is there something, a sort of a style, a travel writing style that you picked up along the way?
Well, there is. I mean, it depends on what series you're writing for. Right now, I'm working for the Fodors series, which is much more oriented toward people with some money, families, you know, people a bit older than me, actually. But so that's fun in terms of the hotels and restaurants you get to try, even if it's not necessarily as aligned with my personal travel style as Let's Go might have been back in the day.
Right. And how, so when you're a travel writer, obviously you don't, or maybe not obviously, do you do the whole book or you just do parts of a particular book? You're in Hong Kong right now, I guess, and what I can tell about you is that apparently you're trying to review some restaurants because I keep getting email for you from various restaurants.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you forwarded to me rather than just showing up at the restaurants yourself, which you probably could have done, right?
Listen, my friend, I have a driver's license. I could prove I was you, and then we could they wouldn't find your body, and I could just, it'd be like a bad Columbo. That's all I'm saying.
Right, if you ever want to get a travel gig, it shouldn't be too hard. You can point to all your work online and so forth.
Do you have a good reputation, or would I need to sort of start from scratch?
Well, it depends on who you talk to, I guess. But actually, one other thing I've been working on lately is a series of restaurant guides to U.S. cities. So I've been in Austin, Texas for a few months working on a restaurant guide there, and we did one to New Haven. And those are sort of another style entirely. They're very opinionated restaurant guides, so when a place is no good, we just come right out and kind of trash it, which is, we think not necessarily very easy to find in the world of restaurant reviews.
No, one of my jokes along the way has been when a restaurant review is not good, they always call the meal interesting. You know, which is how I describe many of my dates through the 80s and the 90s. They were interesting, or that's how I was described. I'm not sure. So do you focus on food, or you? I know that you've changed hotels because you gave me a different number. Do you focus, you look at the lodging as well, or pretty much you're a food guy?
Here in Hong Kong, my focus is food and also hotels. So I'm writing the dining and the lodging sections of the Photos Hong Kong Guide. But in general, food is definitely my foremost focus in travel writing. But I've been covering Italy for 8 years now for Photos. So it's hard not to fall in love with food when you spend a couple months every year in Italy.
Now, I noticed that you're reviewing Chinese restaurants in Hong Kong, and maybe that's too obvious. I guess. I don't know. Are there bad Chinese restaurants in Hong Kong?
Not so far. The food's been amazing here. I've really enjoyed, in particular, the goose foot.
Goose foot?
The real Cantonese food is kind of surprising, I guess, for some people in terms of what shows up on your plate.
I see.
If you say, I want what that guy over there is having. They always first tend to suggest the more westernized dishes, like the fried rice or, mm-hmm. or something. But then if you manage to convince them that you really want to try what they would eat, then you get really some fascinating, things.
And have you actually had goose foot?
We've had a lot of abalone.
Okay.
We've had pigeon 3 times now in 5 days, I think.
Well, they say you can never get enough. They always say you can never get enough pigeon. So, I think Dr. C. Everett Koop said that.
Robin, how is pigeon?
I don't know. Oh, sorry. I had to do that once, dude.
I'm personally a big fan. I mean, they do a lot of pigeon in France too, but here in Hong Kong they roast it whole. They kind of lacquered. They do it in a lacquered style, kind of like you would imagine a Peking duck, but it's more like Peking pigeon.
Wow. These are not pigeons that they find in the street. I mean, these are raised. These are kind of game pigeons, I guess. Right.
Right.
Make me
Although,
feel...
often another thing they do is they'll take the fish out of the tank in front of you and it'll be flopping around. They'll carry it, march it around the restaurant in a big net before they they go to cook it. And in the street market, we've had some amazing seafood that's just live wriggling right there in front of you. And I just watched someone eat a shrimp that was just wriggling right into his mouth. We asked them to flash fry it for us.
Now, were you this adventurous when you were younger about trying different kinds of cuisines and things which might be considered outside of the norm, or is this something that came with the job?
I think I've always been that way. I've always had kind of a fetish for trying food that looks really weird or unusual to other people. I don't know if half the time if it's actually just sort of the adventure aspect of it that makes it taste better to me. I've had arguments with people about whether it could really be that something new and different really tastes better, or if I'm just getting pleasure out of the mere fact of tasting something new. Kind of an interesting neuroscience question in a way.
We're talking with Robin Goldstein, my my younger, more attractive doppelganger, who is a...
How do you know that?
I'm just assuming. I think it's a safe guess.
You are younger, right?
He's definitely younger, and so I'm guessing he's more attractive. I don't know. And he writes for Off the Map Press. Do you actually own Off the Map Press?
Yeah, Off the Map Press is the restaurant guide company that I founded a few years ago.
Okay.
But I'm writing... The travel writing is largely for photos. Off the Map Press is just focusing on restaurants.
Gotcha. Okay. So that they can... people are interested right now. It looks like you've got a New Haven guide, and you say there's a second guide that you're working on now for Austin, you mention?
We're working on Austin. That's going to come out next month. And we've also got a guide to Northampton and Amherst, Massachusetts, the five-college area of Western Massachusetts. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
Sure.
That area much, but...
And how did
you
these
went to
are
so, in Boston? I'm sure
these
are.
Seem like these seem sort of like random places on the map. Is this where other writers have family, and so this seems like a good idea, or large, interesting populations of different kinds of cuisine?
Well, Northampton's where I grew up, so that made perfect sense. And then New Haven's where I went to law school.
Gotcha.
It was kind of funny. During law school, I was kind of well known around school for being kind of never there. And I actually at one point had a funny experience. I was a final exam was due on a certain day, and I'd emailed the professor to let him know I was sick, and I wasn't going to be able to make it. I would appreciate if I could just email him in the exam, instead of turning it in by hand. And I bumped into that same professor on the day that I was supposed to be emailing in the exam. I bumped into him at a conference in Italy. Where he was seated at the same table as me.
A little wow. Awkward.
Very nice.
And since I'd never been in his class, he introduced himself to me. He said, Jack Balkan, nice to meet you. At which point I was forced with a choice between lying to him about my name. Or you know what I should have done is I should have said I was the other Robin Goldstein.
I was going to say, you should have given him my name.
It would have been believable because you're a patent attorney.
Exactly. Now, you actually went to school to become an intellectual property attorney?
Well, I did do some IP insofar as I had a focus in law school other than
so weird.
Being away from it. I did do some IP research and stuff. I wrote a couple of papers.
Isn't that strange?
I'm
bizarre numerological thing.
Yeah. I just think it's very, very, very weird. Obviously there are folks around who have similar names to we do, all of us to who we are, but to sort of find somebody who's sort of in a similar kind of place and especially in the early days of the internet. So,
absolutely.
I would love to talk to you some more, but unfortunately we're sort of coming up on the end of the phone. I try to call you in using one of these less expensive overseas connections, and the lines were all down. So I wasn't able to do that, but I figured I knew that you were waiting and you'd gotten up early, and we definitely wanted to talk to you. So how long do you stay in Hong Kong, and where do you go next?
I'm Hong Kong till the end of the month, more or less, till the end of May, and then I'm going to be back in Austin for a couple weeks for the book launch. Then I'm heading down to Bogota, Colombia.
Oh, very exciting! So you don't get back to the state. You don't get back to the states for quite a while.
I'm kind of back and forth. I've been living out of a suitcase for a while, so we'll see. We'll see if I figure out where I'm actually going to live at some point in the future.
So next week at this time, you're going to be still in Hong Kong, or
I will. I will.
All right. Maybe we could try it again.
Sure.
All right. We'll give it a shot next week. And can we plug anything that you're doing? Is there any way that we can get you some kind of bonus off of this?
Well, the restaurant guide to Austin that's coming out is going to be called The Fearless Critic.
All right.
And that'll be, if anyone's heading to Austin, they should look for it. It'll be available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble.
Sweet.
And so forth. So.
All right. Well, are you getting up and you're going to go explore the day, go down and find, see how the local Starbucks is, or are you going to...
Yeah, we're just going to look for the nearest live goosefoot.
Excellent. Well, you're a good sport for being on the air with us. We really appreciate it, and it's great to hear your voice. I feel like I've known you at least the last 10 years. And
likewise.
And I hope that I have not embarrassed you in any of my exploits. And and as you say, likewise.
No, it's been good for a laugh from now and then. People don't know me very well. They ask certain questions.
Well, good. I want to talk about those questions. I think it'll be interesting. Maybe we can do that next week. But
stay away from the
sounds good.
Stay away from the flash fried lady's fingers. That's our advice here.
All right, Robin. Take care and have a wonderful wonderful time this week. We'll try to talk to you next week.
Okay.
All right. Cheers.
Talk to you then.
Bye bye. I like him.
I like him too.
Yeah.
See, that's good. If you have a good doppelganger like that, it's good.
Not an evil twin, but
but mine, a lot of them are losers. I found a lot of them are on most wanted lists. A lot of them, you know, they're I find them on sites where people who have, you know, Johns appear, you know, the list of town Johns appear, you know, and it just doesn't make me
Does Google cross-reference them so you can see them on a map with little colored X's? I see.
Know, a lot of those, a lot of those sex crime location laws that seem to reveal their...
I do want to talk to him because clearly he's gotten some questions along the last 10 years about the whole transgender thing and are you the Robin Goldstein? I mean, I think that's what he was intimating in the very end there.
I think that's exactly what he was intimating.
And so I'd be fascinated about that. And but what an interesting gig to be a travel writer.
What a wonderful, I mean, no doubt, what a wonderful college gig.
Yeah.
Send you off for 7 weeks with an itinerary. I mean, it makes me want to go back to school just so I can get the damn job.
Get that job. All right. Well, listen, we are woefully out of time. So I want to thank Parviz Vitali, who had to make a quick run out here. I want to thank you.
I should thank you.
You hang around for a little bit, maybe see Barry Bonds hit number 714.
Maybe watch a little of the game,
sure. Baseball. And we want to thank you, as always, plus Jason Nathanson, randomshow.blogspot.com. Want to thank Brian Cox at Cox Media, and, of course, you, the listeners, www.schnauzerlogic.com, robin@schnauzerlogic.com. Give us your comments. If there's stuff that you like, that's great. And if there's stuff that you don't like, let us know about it. We really want to hear your opinions. We're asking for them by name right now. Until next week, if the good Lord's willing, the creek don't rise, there ain't no meltdown. We'll be back. Until then, I love you, Mom. I miss you, Dad. Show up, pay attention, tell the truth, and don't be attached to the outcome. And have yourself a great week. Take care. Bye-bye.
This is over now, and you just got to deal with it.
I want you to know it's over.
It's over, Johnny. It's over!
It's over, Harvey. I'm sorry. I need to get on with my life.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.